This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow. I had the air on while I was driving in today. Though, the only reason I needed the air on when I was driving in today is because my window is fogging up. Because I certainly don't need cold air at this point. It's not bad yet. There's a little bit of chill in the air. You know, it's that fall day. It's actually a pretty beautiful day. For my personal taste, just a little too cold, but that's okay. I'm just kind of, you know, cold-blooded, having grown up in the Philippines. I'm putting on the jackets pretty quick. So I got my little windbreaker on, my little Superman windbreaker on today. It's interesting because when I don't have it zipped up, you can't really tell what it is. But then when I zip it up, it's like, oh, Superman. So, so it's kind of fun. Anyways, so good week at work. We got a lot of good things accomplished. Had some good meetings this week. Just came out of a meeting a couple hours ago with our users for one of the big projects that we're working on. And plugging ahead, and we're making some good progress there, so that's all good, And I think worked out how we're going to be doing one of the more complicated things on the project when we're projecting forward, and I like the solution. I like it. It's going to be very accurate, and it's going to capitalize on work that the data guy, the guy who has been with the department for 25 years, who is the data guy, is going to capitalize work on he's done. Plus, we will be able to have, you know, the ongoing maintenance take place there. So, good. Always like to reuse code, especially when that code comes from someone who knows what he or she is doing. So. Always good. Code reuse of code that actually works. So that all is good. Everything's puttering along there. I'm puttering along writing. I'm at that stage now with the fourth book where I have thrown out the complications and all the dice are in the air. I'm at like 160 pages or something like that. So I'm closing in on the halfway point. Because these books are usually about 400 pages. And so, you know, I'm closing in at that point. Now the question is, do I have enough complication, enough dice in the air, that getting it all resolved and landing it is going to get me somewhere around 400 pages? And that's always a little bit of, it's always, you know, interesting at this point. Because sometimes they introduce too many complications, and then the book ends up going long, which is what happened with the second book. But the third book, it landed pretty good. I was actually expecting it to be a little shorter than it was. But all in all, it landed well. So I was pretty happy with the pacing and how it came together. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I'm hoping by the time I turn back and start working on the beta version of the production version of book number 3, which that's coming up in 2 weeks, November 15th, I'm going to switch gears and head into doing the actual production version of book 3. I'm hoping by that point to be halfway through on book 4, which should be just about right, because these books are running between 100 and 125,000 words. They're somewhere around 125,000 words, I think, and I'm already at, I think I'm going to be like somewhere around, if I keep it on at my present pace, I'm going to be somewhere around 75,000 words. So I should be, well, a little bit past half, which would be cool. So we'll see. It's, you know, it's going okay. It's just a fascinating thing. Because it's really like sniffing for truffles. You know, it really has that, I'm just a little piggy looking for, you know, snorting and sniffing and moving forward and then nope, and backing up a couple of steps. And so I'm in the middle of one of those kind of, I'm not necessarily backing up a couple of steps, but as I'm going forward, I keep turning. Because I've got one character that I wasn't really sure what his place was in the book. I knew I wanted him there for some comic relief, but I didn't know really what his story was about. He's an incidental character that I wanted to shine a light on certain things of relationships between men and women. And I didn't really understand that was what he was there to do. But now that I'm a little farther along with that character and some other things that are happening with that character, I'm thinking, oh yeah, I could use him for that. Because there's some other themes that I'm exploring in this book of relationships between male and female, and it's going to work out that, you know, I can use him for that too. So I'm actually going to probably back up and revisit his story through the book this weekend and pad out those things some more and set them up a little bit more so that when I'm working on his section right now, I'll know what I need to tie into. So I love writing. So much fun. I think everybody should write, or everybody should do something creative, wherever it is. It's just something to explore, something to invent, something to research, something to learn, something. Everybody should do something. Anyways, aside from that, everything is pottering along. It's good. I'm grateful for life, grateful for all the things that are going on. This Friday, I may be at the house, or I might not. My wife is having a party this Friday from some girlfriends. They're coming over to play Farkle, and it's actually a pajama party. And so at first I was just going to completely vacate from the house, but my wife told me recently, she said, if you're downstairs, you know, you could just stay downstairs. There would be no problem. I said, okay, well, whatever. I won't come upstairs. I will just putter around in my little area and be happy as a clam. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I may just go ahead and go see a movie or do something. Depends on how much writing I get done. If it turns out, I have a doctor's appointment with my dad, and if it turns out that I need some more writing time, then probably I will stay home and just do some writing. But, you know, we'll see. I'll just be the weird old uncle in the basement. So there you go. Last week, I talked about an article that I had read. I think it was like something like 3 ways to never get angry again. There was a bunch of links in that article. Really a pretty fascinating website. The guy who has it has a lot of interesting stuff. And one of those links led to some other information. And The name of the article was how to make difficult conversations easy. And so I linked to that, started reading through that. And originally I was going to put those notes in with the notes last week. But the problem was when I got all the notes together, it was like 21 pages. And I thought, nah, there is no way we're going to get through that. So I think all of these things are like really good things. I think all of them really are nothing more than how do you deal with the flesh in someone else. And they have their own terminology for it. They don't call it the flesh, obviously, because that is laden with spiritual overtones. But it's the same thing. And so what they call it is dinosaur brain, I think, which is fine. That's fine if we want to call it dinosaur brain. And so the idea is, okay, you've got someone and they're screaming in your face at the top of the lungs or ranting angrily and you can't get a word in edgewise or sobbing so hard that you can barely understand what they're saying. I'm quoting from the article. We've all been there. These situations don't happen a lot, thank God, but we all feel helpless when they do. And because they're rare, we don't ever seem to get better at handling them. Problem is, and this is very true, these moments are often critical because they're usually with people we care about. So what's the best way to handle these difficult situations? So the author of this article ran up, talked to someone he knew, Dr. Albert J. Bernstein, or Bernstein, clinical psychologist, over 40 years of experience, author, number of great books that are dealing with this issue, dealing with people. And so they just go through the different things. And all of these are good things. All are good. I agree. And so we all kind of need to be reminded of that. First of all, stay calm. Slow yourself down. I have a little saying, you know, flesh breeds flesh, spirit breeds spirit. When you are in a situation that is charged by the flesh, which that kind of emotional outburst more than likely is charged by the flesh. You can have emotional outbursts that are charged by the spirit, but in those outbursts, there is often love and acceptance and joy, and there is not this feeling of powerlessness and being out of control or rage or any of those things. So that specifically, we're talking about situations where you're feeling powerless and helpless because someone is like really mad or upset or those kind of things. That's all charged by flesh. And what the professor says, you know, the emotional side of our brain, the dinosaur brain, which I'm not necessarily comfortable with saying the flesh is all emotional, because there are valiant emotions. You know, there are noble emotions that are not flesh. It is true that any emotions that you have something to do with your self-concept. But things can be affecting your self-concept in a good way, and you can become emotional, and I don't think that's dinosaur brain. Dinosaur brain, in my mind, is more of flesh-inspired. So, you know, the easiest thing to do is just to ping back on that. That's another phrase I use for it, pinging. Someone yells, you yell back. That's pinging. And you see a lot of pinging among adolescent girls and their mothers. Because mom will say something, adolescent girl will roll her eyes. Who'd you talk about? And just, you know, it just accelerates. So the first thing to do in these situations is keep calm. Because the other person, when they're in a heightened flesh state like that, they're going to be really quick to treat anything that you say as an attack to fuel. The flesh is going to take anything you say, try to spin it around, and make it attack their self-concept so that they'll get more emotional. And so you really have to stay calm. Next thing you need to do, and this phraseology is a bit challenging, but you have to understand what he's saying, is treat them like a child. Okay, don't be condescending, but sometimes you wouldn't try to necessarily rationalize with a screaming child, and you wouldn't get angry at them for yelling, at least you shouldn't. You should set aside the hysterics and deal with the underlying problem. And that is very important. You know, try to get beyond the shouting to find out what really is the issue. And simply trying to logically explain why yelling isn't helping doesn't work with three-year-olds either. And it won't with grown-ups. You have to ignore the drama. He said, people say to me all the time, you mean I have to treat a grown-up like a three-year-old? And his response is, yes, absolutely. If you're a parent, what do you do with a tantrum? You ignore it, or at least you try to, but with an adult, you try to talk them out of it, and it never works. Now, that's not to say that you don't try to do something. What you're going to try to do is get to the root of the problem. But you want to image them in your mind as someone who needs some assistance. They are a child. They are in a situation where they are throwing a tantrum, or they're behaving like someone who is out of control. And so you want to find out where they are and work your back in. I thought this was a good suggestion. The next one is, please speak more slowly. I'd like to help. And they say very specifically, and this is absolutely true, anything that slows the situation down is good. So anything you can do to slow the situation down, it's good. So if you can even get them to start speaking more slowly, that will actually slow the situation down. So that's just, it's very practical. Ask the question, what would you like me to do? And don't ask it belligerently. Because if you ask some version of, please, I'm sorry, I'm not getting everything that you're saying, could you express it to me in different ways, or could you express it to me more slowly so that I can understand the pieces, because I'd like to help, you can follow that up then with, what would you like me to do in this situation? Because the doctor says, when people are angry at you or attacking you, it's easy to fight back or run away, but what you really need to do is something that engages their brain, and that's not hard. Just ask them, what would you like me to do? And what they're going to have to do is recognize that question, and they need to formulate an answer, and that makes them think, even if it's just for a second. And that, in turn, slows them down, which is what you're really trying to do. He says it moves them from their dinosaur brain to their cortex, and then negotiating is possible, which is really good. This is really good also. Don't make statements, ask questions. Because if you're making statements, they're going to take that as either a veiled form of fighting back, or is a threat, you know, or you're trying to explain your way. Mansplaining, some people would call it. And that's not going to work. If someone's really upset, you don't want them to get the impression that you're saying, here's why I'm right and you're wrong. That's not what you do. You ask questions. Okay, what about this? You know, so... So he says, what I typically do with people is to reflect back the emotion they're feeling. If they're saying something like, I'm Jesus Christ, and they're trying to crucify me, instead of saying, no, you're not Jesus Christ. And he's got a statement here, but if you put it in a question, it would be, well, I would imagine that's pretty scary, is it? You know, something like, and they'll go, yeah. But the act of listening and reflecting back doesn't necessarily attack them, but it makes them believe that you are actually listening to what they're saying. And that's beneficial. One moment, I'm getting my mail. Next thing is, start with sentences like, I'd like. Because once you get them being rational, the last thing that you want to say is something that sounds like an accusation. So, any sentence that begins with you are does not come with wonderful, and does not come with wonderful, will be interpreted as name calling. So you're starting to negotiate, and what you're doing is you're saying your sentences and starting like, I think I'd like this, you know, to happen, or I think I'd like to see this, et cetera, et cetera. And the last thing, which is really interesting, is to let them have the last word. You know, people are really funny about it. There's some people that just have to have the last thing. And they will say pretty much anything. They will revisit stuff that you're always done with, already done with. They will, and you just have to say, smile and nod, let them go. You know, I deal with some people like this at times. And you can go all the way through, you can be done, everything's decided, and then they'll stare at you for a minute. And then they'll revisit something else just so they can be the person that has the last word. I'm backing into my garage. And that's okay. You know, you just let them have it. If that's going to make their day, having the last word in the conversation, just let them have it. Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? Anyways, so that's news from Lake Wobegon. Good points. I may actually get finished in 20 minutes today. This is Phil Varad, and I have made it home.